Good morning, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the Stimulating Program Initiative for Retirees that inspires thought. I'm Judy Steinig, Director of Community Programs for the Orthodox Union, and it's my honor to coordinate and host this program. The OU started SPIRIT several years ago as an online program, and now we're happy to present it as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for empty nesters, retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, sandwich generation parents, and seniors. Everybody who's looking for educational, intellectual, and spiritual growth. Now, during the pandemic, since we all still continue to shelter in, SPIRIT has become a wonderful way for each one of us to engage in a virtual setting. Today's program is called Growth Through Trauma, How a Challenging Past Becomes a Brighter Future. We are so honored to have it presented by Bracha Rupp, LCSW, who's the program supervisor of OHEL's JFNA Holocaust Program. The OU enjoys a long-standing, wonderful relation with OHEL Children and Family Services. We appreciate their participation in the SPIRIT program. It's my honor to turn the SPIRIT forum over to Bracha Rupp. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, and welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for joining on this. I'm not sure where you are, but outside my window is nice and snowy. So it's really wonderful to do this all virtually. Now I'm going to share my slideshow, make sure everybody can see it. Okay, can everybody see? Robertson, Steinig, can you see what I'm seeing?
Perfect to me.
Fantastic. All right. So the topic today is called Growth Through Trauma, How a Challenging Past Can Become a Brighter Future. And the past that we're going to be talking about is the collective Jewish past and how it's influenced us and made us who we are today. When I was in school, every year in history class, the first day we would always learn the same phrase. The phrase would be, in order to know where you're going, you have to know your history. You have to, in order not to be doomed to repeat it. So Otto Frank, I'm pretty sure everybody knows who he is, but if you don't, he is the father of Anne Frank. And he said this quote in 1967, to build up a future, you have to know the past. It's really important to know where we come from, what our past was like, because it shapes us, it makes us who we are today. So let's talk a little bit from a scientific perspective of why our past is important. So there's three concepts in science, nature and nurture, and then there's this new scientific perspective called epigenetics. So nature, the first part is about genes. Who you are is because of your DNA and what your parents' DNA was and what your grandparents' DNA. So for example, if your mother and father had blue eyes, you are going to have blue eyes. That is your DNA, that is your genes. You really can't change that. That is what you're going to look like or even be like because of your genes. And then there's that conflict or the other part of science that says nurture. Nurture is also really important. Who you are today is because of what your parents were like and how you were raised, and that influences you growing up and influences your thought process, and everything about you today also is impacted by nurture. So for an example of something nurture would be if somebody was raised in a farm all their life. So they're going to be used to animals and cows, whereas someone who's never met a cow because they were raised in the city might be very frightened of it. And that's just a nurture part. That means that you take two individuals, but you raise one a certain way and they will be used to something a certain way, or possibly not be afraid of something or be afraid of something. Or let's say somebody who was used to a very clean home might be able to have an easier time having their home be clean, whereas someone who's raised in a messy home and was never taught how to properly clean a home, they'll have more of a difficult time having a clean home. And then there's this third concept called epigenetics. And this is a very fascinating idea in which that you have nature, you have nurture, but then what your parents have gone through doesn't change your DNA, but it changes the way your DNA is read and processed because of experiences of your parents or grandparents. For example, so it puts a marker on specific parts of your DNA. So your DNA isn't changed, but the way it's read is going to be different. So for example, there's something called a Dutch hunger winter. In the last year of the war, the World War II, 1944, Holland was starving. There was no food to be found. The Nazis have barricaded everything. People were dying of starvation left and right. What people who had their conceived children during that winter, the winter that people were starving, they found that as they got older, they had a higher rate of obesity than children of the same cohort that didn't experience this Dutch hunger winter. And they looked at it and they found that the markers on that specific gene that read about weight loss or weight gain or holding on to food was changed. Because what happened was the parents who experienced this starvation period, their body needed to change how they held on to food in order to survive. So every calorie was so important to them in order to survive that they held on to those calories. The children born from these parents during those years also had that kind of genetic mutation a little bit to hold on to food. However, if you're living in a time of surplus where you don't need to hold on to food, that leads to obesity. So this is how science shows why it's so important to understand our past and understand where we come from, because this is how it influences us today. And here are some studies that show exactly why epigenetics is of importance. So for example, if you see over here, a paternal grandfather who was severely underfed before puberty, their grandchild is less likely to develop diabetes. A maternal grandmother who was severely underfed for puberty, their grandchild is more likely to develop diabetes. So you see, it's the same issue, but it depends on who went through the situation. So if you would understand and know your grandfather went through a starvation period, or your grandmother, if your maternal grandmother went through a starvation period, you'll be aware to know that you have to look out for diabetes, or say, maybe I don't need to, I'm less likely to develop diabetes compared to my cohort, and therefore that's not something you have to worry about. Again, if you look at the top left corner, it says, if a mother survived the Holocaust, a child is at possible higher risk for PTSD because of the altered stress hormones that the mother went through. It affects the child. And if you know that your mother went through this traumatic experience and you're aware of it, then you could do something about it. And this is just a couple of other, I have a source over here, but it's very interesting to see how epigenetics affects the person today based off of what the parents and grandparents went through. So now I find it very interesting. We're gonna kind of compare about how the Torah kind of knew already what science is now just discovering. As Jews, we put a very big significance on our past. All the way back, the reason why we study Torah, it talks about who we came from, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, it goes through everything, it goes through all the, you know, the 12 tribes. We learn this from children. We put a very big emphasis because we believe that we are who we are because of where we come from. And it's interesting to see how science is now backing up kind of what we always knew as Jews. In the Torah, it says that a Kohen is a Kohen because their father was a Kohen, and they are a Kohen because their father was a Kohen, and it goes through a patrilineal line, and you cannot become a Kohen if your father was not. There's no way that you are able to do that. If your father was not a Kohen, you cannot become a Kohen. And that seems like it's a very genetic perspective. And studies have now come out and said there's actually a Kohen gene that they've discovered in people who are Kohanim, and it only is through male. Females who have father is a Kohen will not have that gene. It's only a son of a Kohen, and their son will have that Kohen gene, and they will discover it on pretty much a large percentage of people who say that they are Kohanim today can have that, you can find that gene on them. So there's a very clear example of how science is now backing up the Torah. Another topic that we spoke about before is nurture. And the Torah has discussed this many times. One of the reasons why there's a source that says Torah Simcha, we know that in order to be Jewish, you have to go through the matrilineal line. If your mother was a Jew, you will be a Jew. And if your grandmother is a Jew, you will be a Jew. And if you're a Jew, your daughter will be a Jew. It goes through the female line. And there are sources that say the reason for that is because the mother is the primary caregiver. It's called Torah Simcha. We are giving over and nurture. And whatever we teach our children, that comes absorbed into them. And that's why they have a Jewish perspective. And then their child will now, they will raise their child the same way. Somebody, you don't have to be born a Jew to become a Jew. But if you became a Jew, your daughter will be a Jew no matter what. And that again is because of Torah Simcha. It's the impact of nurture on who we are. So now that we understand the importance of our past and the importance of history, we have to understand who we are as Jews and how that has impacted us. So Jews in our past and our long ago past and current past have really experienced great oppression and challenge. Jews in general have had a very traumatic history, all stemming all the way back from as far as you can remember, but we've experienced physical and emotional mistreatment in any country that we've been in, discrimination. You ask any parent, grandparent, great-grandparent, you'll find mistreatment, discrimination, harassment, execution, language and vocational obstacles. It could be here in America where you couldn't keep Shabbos and you had to either work on Shabbos or you had to leave your job every single week. It could have been experiencing terrorist attacks, shootings, Spanish Inquisition, leaving countries, the Holocaust. All of this is our Jewish past, and there's a lot of trauma involved in that. Before we get really into the idea of Jewish trauma, we have to understand what trauma is in general. So the definition of trauma is a deeply distressing or disturbing experience. And there are several types of trauma. The first type of trauma is called acute trauma. That's from a single stressful or dangerous event that a person goes through. So acute trauma would be walking in the street and somebody knocking you down and saying, "Dirty Jew." So that was a one-time experience, but that's very stressful and it's very traumatic. And it can have flashbacks and you can be scared and you'll be frightened to walk down the street again. What if somebody does this again to me? That would be acute trauma. Then there's something called chronic trauma, which is repeated and prolonged exposure to highly stressful events. So again, for example, somebody who went in a concentration camp, every single day is a stressful event. It's the same stressor, but it's in a long and prolonged exposure. A similar thing would be somebody who's in an abusive relationship where every single day is unknown. Every single day they're getting beaten or verbally assaulted. Complex trauma would be exposure to multiple traumatic events. So for example, somebody who went through the Holocaust, they went from a ghetto to a concentration camp, to coming back to their hometown and finding their entire family gone, to having to go to a new country alone and starting to rebuild a family. All of those are traumatic events that are a chain of traumatic events that can create a complex trauma. This last kind of trauma is very interesting because that's called secondary trauma or vicarious trauma, which is when a person does not actually go through a traumatic event themselves, but they develop traumatic symptoms based on having close contact with someone else who has experienced a traumatic event. And second generation Holocaust survivors, so children of survivors, very often have this secondary trauma. For example, somebody who's grown up in a household where their mother every night has nightmares of the Holocaust and they wake up to their mother crying and screaming every single night. They didn't actually go through the trauma themselves, but they experienced it secondhand. I'm going to make just a disclaimer right now. I'm going to be talking about the Holocaust a lot, even though I know there's a lot of traumatic events in our Jewish history. People who are American had traumatic events, people who are Israeli had traumatic events. There's all these, you don't have to have gone through the Holocaust to have had a traumatic event, but this is probably the most widely studied event in our Jewish history, which is why there's the most data on it. So that's why I'm going to keep referring back to this specific event. All right, so I'm going to go back to this slide for a second, because if you notice, there's a lot of words in here that sound very awful. Distressing, disturbing, stressful, dangerous, prolonged exposure, trauma. So based on this, you would think that trauma is an awful thing to go through. What a terrible, horrible thing, right? But the Torah has a very different perspective on it. The Torah doesn't necessarily see trauma as bad. It sees it as a character building experience. And again, we're going to have science backing us up on the Torah perspective. So there's a concept that says Hashem had us we had to be slaves in Egypt in order to get the Torah. And the reason for that is the concept called Kor HaBarzel, which is purifying of metal. And when you put metal into a fire, you take out the impurities from it, and it becomes a shinier, cleaner, and stronger material than would have been had we not put it through the fire. And that's exactly how the Torah sees us as Jews when we go through challenging events, that it purifies us and it helps us gain perspectives that we normally would not be able to gain otherwise. So now that we understand, why our history is important and how it affects us as Jews, we have to understand how it affects us today, how our past and our traumatic past affects us as Jews and us as individuals today. Again, why I'm talking about the Holocaust is because there was such a wide amount of people that went through this and has experiences that this has been a really studied phenomenon. And I once spoke to a psychiatrist who told me that Jews have written the book on trauma. And when that book is studied, we rewrite the book on trauma. The Holocaust has impacted us in such a way that every scientist or any researcher out there that wants to study trauma usually studies Holocaust survivors. And now they're studying the second generation and finding out what the effects of parents going through it has affected the children. And now they're studying third generation and seeing that there are still a great impact from the Holocaust. So even three generations down, what a parent went through, a grandparent went through, will affect the child and the grandchild. And obviously that goes all the way up the line, because we haven't ever stopped having trauma, right? We've had, there's been Kazakhs, there's been terrorist attacks, there's been expulsions from different countries, Gezeras Tachvata, Khmelnytsky, there's been chasing us out of the Middle East. There's been just so many different events that we've gone through that have really impacted us as who we are as a people. One of the things that research has found is that trauma impacts our perspective. And these are not necessarily all impacted the same way, but it impacts us. So these are kind of neutral topics that when people go through it, it changes how they view it. So for example, relationship with God. Any person who goes through a trauma, their impact, their relationship with God will have changed. Not necessarily the same way, but it will change. So for example, one person may say, their relationship with God grew stronger. They had to rely on them more. They couldn't rely on anybody else, and they prayed more and they felt more connected. Another person going through a similar event will say, if this is the type of God my God is, forget it. I want nothing to do with them. So the reaction to this concept is different, but the fact that it changed is the same. Another example would be emotional attachment or relationships. Somebody who goes through a trauma may be overly attached. They may hover or hold close to their child because they never want to let go, because what if they let go and something bad happens to them? Someone else will not be able to be attached to them because what if they get attached and then something happens to them and it won't be able to bear it? So let me just stay aloof. Another thing would be parenting techniques. Somebody who lost everything or went through a trauma, they'll everything that child does is good. They can't see any wrong. And another person will be overly critical or maybe kind of negate anything their child went through, because whatever you went through is just not nearly as tough as what I went through. Again, different approaches on this theme, but the fact that it changed is the same. Every person who goes through something difficult, how they view their life and how they view these different themes is going to change. Another thing would be great obligation or mission. People who go through difficulties, usually they come out the other end with a mission or an obligation. And whether that's, you know, my great-grandfather always said, now come on, Hitler. They're going to have children. Their obligation is to replenish, because they want to make sure that whatever got wiped out, they're going to make sure that it's even better than it was. Other people have an obligation or a mission. You know, somebody who went through infertility wants to make sure nobody else feels as alone as they did, and they will start an organization. Somebody who went through cancer or has had a parent or child pass away from cancer, they will start an organization to help others go through that. And it's very interesting, but you'll find that usually these big changes in a person's life or these big organizations that are helping many, many people are usually started from somebody going through a trauma or a difficulty or a challenge. So our greatest weakness can often be our greatest strength at a time where we think we're the most vulnerable and it's the most difficult and we don't think we'll ever be able to get out. Those are often the moments that shape us and define us and make us even stronger than we would have been without it. Every person of a certain age has experienced difficulties and have experienced trauma. There's actually a study that's been done that's fascinating. They found, I heard it from the Department for the Aging, but they have found, a Jewish Federation has also found this, that 90% of seniors have experienced one form of trauma or another. So we're talking about a majority of people go through something very difficult in their life. And usually that I hear people say, I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy. However, having been through this difficult circumstance, I'm happy I went through it. So let's say somebody who went, it took a very long time for them to find their partner to get married. They were miserable and they wouldn't have ever wanted this. And they don't want their children to ever have to go through what they went through. But having been through this harrowing experience of taking years and years to find their soulmate, they now appreciate it on such a greater level. The same thing with not having children. If you didn't have children for many years, it's an awful, terrible thing to go through. But now that they've gone through it, they appreciate their family so much more. So let's talk about some strengths that people have gone, that going through trauma has given us. And this again is specifically research for people, for Jewish people, people gone through the Holocaust and people who've gone through trauma, I would say historical trauma. So an increase for our appreciation and our freedom and for the state of Israel. People who've been chased out of their land, Jews who have been chased out of numerous countries, too many to even count on. The fact that they have Israel, they have such a great appreciation for it because there's that one place where they know that they're safe, they know that they're cared for. And there's those people have a very deep love for the state of Israel. The same thing for appreciation of freedom in general. If you've been told that you can't practice religion or you can't get a job or you can't even go to the park because of who you are, when you go to a country where you do have that, there's a big appreciation for that. Whereas someone who's never gone through doesn't necessarily know to appreciate it. There's also an increase in resilience. People who go through something difficult and came out the other side, they know that they're strong and they know they can get through something else as well. Greater commitment. There's, you know that you're tough, you know that you could do it. And when you put your mind to something, you will accomplish it. There is a strong family of values called filial piety. People who've gone through something difficult. And again, when I say people, I really do mean Jewish people who've been studied in these research studies. They've been found that there really is a great connection to their children and to their family and appreciation in a way that people who may not have gone through the Holocaust or may not have gone through traumatic events don't necessarily have. There's greater adaptability, greater initiative, motivation to create a better world, and a greater sense of purpose. I didn't live through this for nothing. What's interesting to note is that all of these strengths that the people who've gone through the trauma have gotten, there's also found in their children. So if someone from the Holocaust got these strengths, their children will have it too. And I guess that is, we could say that's partly nature because they passed on these values to their children, and partly genes, maybe it was already ingrained in them, and partly epigenetics, that the trauma that the parents went through kind of gave them this resilience, and now their children have it too. I do want to talk about some of the challenges that historical trauma and trauma in general do create, because we can't just say that it's all wonderful and roses. There's definitely some things and some risk factors that are put into us from having experienced trauma and from our parents and grandparents experienced trauma. A couple of risk factors to be aware of are that Jews who went through the Holocaust, their children have higher rates of metabolic syndromes, including obesity, hypertension, and insulin resistance. And I love sharing this because then everybody who has a weight issue says, oh, it's not my fault, it's in my genes, it's my parent, they went through trauma. But there is something to that. Compared to cohorts whose parents have not gone through the trauma, children of survivors definitely have higher rates of obesity and diabetes and heart disease. There's also an increase of guilt and martyr behavior that's more like survivor's guilt. Oh, I went through it, other people didn't. Why did I deserve to go through it? And therefore, I don't deserve enough. And they'll be like a martyr. They'll do things to the extent that they neglect their own self-care. There's increased vulnerability to long-term stress. There's increased anxiety and depression. It's also just to be aware of that children of survivors and grandchildren, there has been linked to higher risk of mental health issues compared to their cohorts that have not gone, whose parents have not gone through this. There's also less likely to be seeking assistance. And I think that's linked to the martyr behavior, possibly, that I can do it alone, or I don't need anybody's help. And it's also possibly has to be connected to the fact that they're wary of strangers. And strangers have hurt them in the past, and I'm not willing to rely on other people because I don't know if I can trust them. There's an increased risk of PTSD as well to be aware of. So now that we know why the past is important, we know what our past looks like and how it impacts us today, what can we do with this information to make sure that we have a healthier, stronger, and better future for us and for our children? The first thing to be aware of is that we have to embrace and accept the scars. There, I know in my family history for sure, being a grandchild of survivors, is that there's something about we don't talk. We pretend, we ignore. If we ignore it, then it doesn't exist. But that's not true. Just because we ignore something and we pretend that it doesn't exist doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It's there. And as we discussed, it's there through our genes, it's there with markers on our genes, and it's there because our parents have kind of nurtured us and taught us that this is something to be afraid of. For I'm going to give a very simple example, but dogs. Oh, a lot of children of survivors and grandchildren of survivors are terrified of dogs. And the reason for it is because their parents are scared of dogs, because dogs had a very big part to play in the camps where they would chase Jews down, and they would, you know, to bring them back to the Nazis. So if we're not aware of why we're afraid of dogs, we don't know how to address that. So we need to be honest about our weaknesses and our vulnerabilities, because that can help us conquer challenges. That can help us get through it. If we understand why we're doing what we're doing and why we're behaving the way we're behaving, it can help us conquer our challenges. It can help us move forward from it. That's the first part. The first part is to accept and acknowledge the fact that we are vulnerable. And these are our vulnerabilities. Again, if we know that we're vulnerable and more likely to have heart disease, we can work on it to prevent it, or we can get scans and we can make sure to stay on top of it. If we don't know that that's something that's a vulnerability, we'll never be able to help ourselves. The second part is to realize how our struggles have made us stronger. Because at the end of the day, yes, we have vulnerabilities and yes, we have weaknesses, but we've also got tremendous strength that going through this trauma has given us. And if we don't acknowledge that and we don't recognize it and embrace it and be proud of it, then it's all for naught. Our challenges and the things that we've gone through have made us a stronger, better people. It's made us a stronger, better individual. And if we stop looking at ourselves as victims and start looking at ourselves as, wow, this is a growth opportunity, or look how much this trauma, which I wouldn't wish upon anybody, but having gone through it, look how much I've become out ahead, and I'm more resilient, and I'm more grateful, and I see the world in a better perspective, or I appreciate my family so much more, then our struggles have been worth something. So here are some ideas of how we can better our future. First is a list of do's. Let's work through our difficult past. In order to do that, we have to acknowledge that we've had a difficult past, and this can be a difficult past in terms of being Jewish. It could be a difficult past being how we were raised, a difficult past of a traumatic event that we went through that really hurt us. Work through it. And it's hard to do and it's painful to do, but when you do it, you'll come out so much stronger and feel better about it. Also, appreciate relationships. Being isolated and avoiding people because you're afraid to trust or because it's too painful, that is one of the number one ways to really, really keep that trauma going. We need to talk to people. We're social creatures. We need to talk to people. We need to be around people. We need to hear other people. And we need to feel connected. Learn coping skills. We don't always have them. Sometimes we're struggling and sometimes we just don't know what to do next. And again, that's one of the things that us at OHEL do, and specifically my program, which I'll talk about a little bit later, but we help you learn coping skills. Sometimes people have an important, sometimes we need to learn them. Improving the world. If you feel like you're here for a reason and you feel like you can do something about it, then our future and our children's future is going to be better for it. Let's pass on our legacy. Let's pass on our history, because again, those who don't know your history are doomed to repeat it. If we don't want to repeat it, we need to pass it on. We need to tell our children, we need to tell our grandchildren what we've been through, what our grandparents have been through, what our history was like. And again, remember the hardships, because this has helped shape us, and remember the strengths, because this again creates us as a human being. Increase our passion. Finding something that you love, find something that you're passionate about, and doing something with that passion will create a better future for ourselves and our children and give us something to live for, to love, and to hope for. What shouldn't we do? We should not ignore our feelings. Again, you ignore your feelings doesn't mean it's not there. It's there and it's causing you stress and anxiety, and it will come out in other ways. Don't worry so much. Don't be resentful for the fact that maybe you've gone through this and other people haven't. That's a surefire recipe for being a miserable human being. Try not to feel so guilty about things. You can only do as much as you can as a human being, and you can't do less. A lot of times we take upon ourselves so much and we feel like we feel bad when we don't do enough. We are human beings and we have to remember that. Stressing out, again, doesn't accomplish anything. If you can accomplish it, then accomplish it. You can't do anything about it, then stop feeling guilty or stressing out, because there's nothing you could do about it. An important factor is try not to harp on loss. And it's a very difficult thing to do when you have experienced loss. But replaying that over and over, that's called what we discussed before, secondary traumatization. If you keep replaying that trauma in your mind over and over, you're constantly being traumatized again and again and again. So again, if you can't do it on your own, seek help. But one of the things that can really hurt you is if you can't keep replaying that loss that you've experienced, because then you can never let go and you can never feel better. I'm going to leave you with a quote by Viktor Frankl. He was a psychologist who went through the Holocaust. He wrote the book, A Man's Search for Meaning, a very powerful book. And he said this quote, "The last of human freedoms, the ability to choose one's attitude in a given set of circumstances." We have a choice how we can, we may not choose the circumstance that we're in, but we have a choice of how to respond to those circumstances. So yes, we don't want to be in this situation. We don't want to be through trauma. We don't want to go through something difficult. But now that we're in something difficult, how do we choose to respond? Do we choose to be angry and resentful and bitter and isolate ourselves? Or do we choose to use this and embrace it and use this opportunity to grow and be stronger and be healthy? I just want to talk a little bit about our program because it kind of ties into it. We have a grant from the Jewish Federation of North America, and we've been working with Holocaust survivors and children of survivors to work through some of the traumatic events that they've gone through, that the parents have gone through, and kind of talk to them and help them grow stronger and recognize their strengths and resilience and learn to live and help their children be stronger as well. We have a new support group starting on Zoom for children of Holocaust survivors. We're calling it the 2G experience. There's going to be two events. It's going to be a 12-part series, Tuesdays from 7:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. and Wednesdays from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. We're going to have a group. There is a limited spots available, but there's going to be a group of children of survivors to meet and interact and talk about issues that they always wondered about and wanted to know more about and share experiences and thoughts and learn from each other. If you have any questions at all or anything that this presentation has brought up that you would like to discuss in private, my email address is bracha_rupp, B-R-A-C-H-A _R-U-P-P at ohealthfamily.org. And my phone number is 347-971-0379. I'm happy to take some questions if anybody wrote any questions in the comments that they would like me to address. Feel free to answer it. And if you want to contact me again in private, you can always do that as well.
Thank you so much, Bethel. I haven't seen any questions yet. But we'll wait a second or two. By the way, anyone who did not get Bracha's contact info, we will send that on the with the recording later today. So don't worry if that didn't come through. I also see it was also put in the chat. But if you can't get it from that, don't worry. You will see it later. I'm not seeing any questions.
Somebody sent, they have some questions. They can't unmute themselves. You can type in a question.
Yeah, please type it in the chat. No one is unmuted for this presentation. So if you have anything, if you could put it into the chat, we would appreciate that. But we do not unmute people in the Spirit program. If you see it directly, if it comes to you directly, just handle it. We will, if it comes to me, I will let you know.
Okay. Okay, I see it says Diana Khan. She was raising her hand before that. She had a question. Can you send it in the chat? Okay, she said yes. She's nodding yes.
Okay, until that one comes in, one just came in to me. Why is a very good question. Why is it that Holocaust survivors feel guilt?
Oh, that's a great question. I think a lot of it has to do with survivor's guilt. It's the fact that why was I chosen to live and everyone else passed away? Well, I'm not any better than anyone else. And therefore, if I was chosen, then I have to do my best and I have super high expectations for myself. And if I don't fulfill those, then again, it goes back to survivor's guilt of saying that I don't deserve to be here. I wish somebody else was in my place.
Okay.
Shoshana, and I'm just going to point out, I just have an interesting story to say. My husband's grandmother survived the Holocaust, and every year at the Pesach Seder, she always says that she calls it the fifth kasha. And we'd go through the four, you know, kashas, and then she would say the fifth one. The fifth one is, why are we here today? And she would always answer it as, the fifth kasha is we are here today because of our children. I don't deserve to be here, but maybe one of my ancestors are deserving to be here, and that's why I had to survive. And I just think that's an interesting thing. I got a couple of questions.
I have some here as well.
Someone asked, how can one heal epigenetics once it's gone to the next generation? I think that's a fascinating question. I don't know enough about epigenetics as a scientist to answer that. And I don't even know if the studies have said anything. So I'm not going to address it specifically just because I don't want to give wrong information. But I do know that epigenetics is not a genetic mutation. I know that the genes are the same. So for example, how you digest food, the genes are the same. It's just that a marker or a stressor is on there. So I believe that if you recognize that there is, let's say, a tendency for obesity, you can work with it. You can have a good diet and you can make sure that you don't get it, but your tendency for it is higher. You're at greater risk. Diane Khan said, can you share the slides with us by email? I'm happy to do that. I can send that to you, Representative Steinig, and you can forward it. I'm okay with that.
Do you feel the same principles you talked about also can apply to personal trauma?
I do, with a caveat saying that all these studies and research that I'm quoting are based on transgenerational traumas. So a lot of it is the same, but you would have to fine tune what I said to make it apply to you, because a lot of the, let's say the challenges and strengths are from studies done on transgenerational trauma. I do believe there are a lot of similarities, but I think you would have to custom tailor it and realize what applies to you and what doesn't. Someone asked, do these symptoms roll over to the third generation? Yes, there's been a lot of studies that have shown that these symptoms do roll over to the next generation. They have not studied fourth generation yet, but they are currently studying third generation, and there is a lot of similarities and a lot of things that have traveled, but it do seem to have weakened in certain things, depending on how you were raised and the awareness of the second generation of how they raised their children. It could have weakened, and by fourth generation, chances are it definitely is diluted, but there are things that are being transferred, especially if not dealt with.
How do survivors change the why into the what?
The why.
That's what it says.
I'm not 100% sure what that question means.
Okay. How do you deal with fear that arises from the anti-Semitism in the world today for someone who's a second generation survivor?
That is such a great question. I would say that it's really taking a look and realizing your strengths and realizing, again, like I said before, what can you change and what can't you change? If there's something you can change, then change it or work on it. If there's something about your fear that you could work on, then do it. But if there's nothing you could change about it and you're just watching the news and being frightened, that's really not helpful to anyone. That's just gonna further traumatize you and you're not getting any benefit from it. So we really have to be insightful and understand ourselves and where this is coming from, what is triggering, deal with the emotions that it's that's coming up, but then anything that you can't work on, you can't change, then we kind of just have to let go.
Okay, I think we'll take one more question. Since some physical issues may stem from the Holocaust, can you offer the names of professionals that will help overcome them since it's more specialized? So I think that would be something perhaps, I mean, it would depend on where people are located. I think the person that asked that, perhaps you could be in touch privately. And Russell, do you have resources outside of the New York area also?
Yes, we do have, like JFNA, Jewish Federation of North America, has all over the United States. They have plenty of resources. And for other countries as well, I know the German Restitution, that organization that handles all of that, does have a lot of resources all over the world for survivors and children of survivors. So if anybody has any questions, they can be in touch with me. I'll be happy to work with them, kind of guide them to the right resources. If they're in our area, well, I'll help them directly. And if they're outside our area, I can refer them out.
Thank you so much, Bracha. It was an excellent presentation. I'm sure everybody will want to see it again when they get the slides and the recording later. So I want to thank you so much. And we'll also get that, you sent me the flyer, so we'll get the flyer also into that email. So if anybody wants
to,
it's on Zoom. So that's one of the benefits we have now with virtual programming.
Okay.
So I want to remind everybody that you'll be getting, as we said, of course, the email later today with that recording, and of course, registration for Thursday's program, which will be another one of our Rediscover and Relocate program. We'll be talking to people that live in Deerfield Beach now and Delray Beach, Florida, and you'll get some personal perspectives from those individuals on what it's like to live in their communities in case that's something that you're interested in making a change. In the email that came out the other day, and you'll be seeing this for the next couple of weeks, we have scheduled for sometime in March a presentation with our editor-in-chief from Jewish Action. That's the OU's amazing magazine that comes out four times a year. It's an award-winning magazine, and there's just a lot of interesting things that we can hear about. But the editor-in-chief, Nechama Carmel, my colleague, would really like to know what you want to know. So we put in a form that if you have specific questions, you're welcome to put them in, and she would be happy to address them. So that's in the email that you'll be getting. So please make sure you look at that. So I want to thank everybody for joining us today. Of course, thank Bracha and Ohel. And I saw somewhere in the group is Harriet Blank, one of her colleagues and someone I've had the pleasure of working with. So we thank Harriet for joining us as well. Everybody take care, have a wonderful day. Be safe, be healthy, and we look forward to seeing you on Thursday. Take care.